In 1 Samuel chapter 17, I want to speak to you tonight about dialogues of discouragement, or we might entitle it, David Slays Three Giants. Now, general discouragement and what we might even call depression is very much a real tool in the hand of Satan to discourage God's people. As we look out around us at the state of our country and the way that things seem to be going against the Church of Jesus Christ in so many ways, and different things that we look at and we might become discouraged about the state of things, and that certainly is an effective tool in his hand. But that's not exactly what I mean tonight when we talk about discouragement. I mean something more personal than that. I mean the personal attack of Satan on your zeal for the Lord. This is what David faced, and so in his experience we see personalized the conversations that he has, our own struggles and our own difficulties, and some very common frustrations that you and I may face in our lives as well. Before David ever faced Goliath, he had to overcome two other giants of discouragement. In fact, the strongest test of David's fortitude was not really the actual physical battle with Goliath. That was almost over before it began. But it was the conversations that he had before facing that great giant. These discouragements came in the form of three conversations in which he was engaged before he faced the giant Goliath. These kinds of conversations are the same kinds of conversations that are taking place today. They're the same type that will wilt your enthusiasm. They'll dampen your zeal and cause you to question the viability of your spiritual goals. And so, tonight, as we look at David's sources of discouragement in these dialogues, these conversations that he has going up, leading up to his facing Goliath, we, I hope, can gain some encouragement for ourselves in the personal discouragements that we face as well. You may have heard of David and Goliath, and we're certainly going to look at that part of the story tonight as well. But before there ever was David and Goliath, there was David and Eliab. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 17. And Jesse said unto David his son, take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren. And carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul, and they, and all the men of Israel, were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went, as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the trench, as the host was going forth to fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, what he'd used before. He was defying the armies of Israel and saying, send your greatest man out to face me, and whoever wins will win the battle for the whole army. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, this man Goliath, fled from him and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up. And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king shall enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mayest see the battle. And David said, what have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. Eliab questions David's motives, and that's exactly what you will have happen to you as you face the giants of discouragements in your life as well. Interestingly, David is actually completely free of the things that are accused toward him by Eliab. He has not been guilty of any of the things that Eliab is trying to insinuate, and he says, with whom have you left those few sheep? That's one of the first things he says, suggesting that David has been irresponsible, that he has come to this battle because he really just wants a chance for glory. And he wants a chance to really show himself and show his strength and show his power and, you know, make a name for himself in the kingdom. Eliab saying this, of course, the whole time, he and all his fellow soldiers shaking in their armor at the very prospect of facing this giant. They themselves not willing to face the giant, but anyone who is willing must be doing it just for glory. That must be why he would be willing to give his life for the sake of Israel, even though they, from their own mouths, recognize the fact that this giant is come up to defy Israel, the people of God. And yet that's not a strong enough cause for them to come before Goliath individually. So in turn, instead, Eliab turns to David and he says, with whom have you left those few sheep? Now it's interesting, the inspired writer lets us know that actually David did, and this seems like a small detail, but actually he had left his sheep with a keeper, as we just got through reading, if you were paying attention during that rather lengthy piece of reading. He had left his sheep carefully with someone. And Eliab says, why are you come up here? Well, actually, the reason why, as we've just got through reading also, was that his father had sent him. This was a completely sincere effort on David's part to obey his father and to be responsible even in the obedience of it. Now, David had been keeping the sheep and doing a careful job of it, as we will discover. In fact, he'd faced off a lion and a bear in order to keep the sheep. He had been doing carefully his job in obscurity up until this moment when, yes, indeed, he does receive great glory. But he didn't forsake that. He didn't give up that obligation in order to pursue the instruction of his father. That's interesting because you and I may oftentimes make the mistake of thinking, well, if God has called me to this new task, then it means that I can completely leave the old task behind and I don't have to worry about it. And sadly, Eliab's accusation would have been true if David had only said, well, you know, my father told me to run down there to where the big battle is taking place. That sounds a lot more exciting than watching these sheep. And so I'm just going to leave my sheep here in the middle of the wilderness. And hey, it's my father's instruction. I've got an excuse and go on anyway. But instead, he was very careful to obey God's instruction to him, his father's instructions to him, and to do it responsibly, though, and handle carefully the obligations that he had already been given. That's important for us to remember because sometimes we can go for that moment of glory or that job that looks a little more glamorous in the kingdom. And in doing so, we can leave behind or think it's okay to leave behind, undone, the things that have been our responsibility heretofore, the things that were done in obscurity, that were thankless jobs, that nobody cared whether or not that sheep was killed or not, and you were the only person who even knew about the lion and the bear that you faced in your private little war on the backside of the wilderness. So it's important for us to realize that as we face new challenges, sometimes, yes, more glamorous challenges, that doesn't give us the excuse of leaving undone the responsibilities that God has given to us. And David, thankfully, was completely clear of the motivations that Eliab accused him of. But nonetheless, Eliab did accuse him, saying, "Why are you come up here? It must be because of the naughtiness, the pride of your heart." Now Eliab was supposed to be on God's side against Goliath. He's supposed to be on the side of the people of God. But instead, ironically and tragically, he is actually taking the Philistine side. He's actually discouraging the one warrior in the whole army that's willing to go forward and face the Philistines. And even though he's supposed to be on David's side and should be his great encourager in his efforts to defend the glory of God, instead he's a great discourager. And you know, sadly, we find the same thing true still today. That oftentimes it is the Christians who serve as the greatest discouragements to those Christians who are sincerely striving with all their heart to serve God. In Christian circles, in fact, it could be defined, that word radical could be defined as anyone who is willing to serve Jesus with more conviction than me. Right? That man is radical because he is obviously overboard in his dedication to this cause, and he's too far. He's extreme. Why? Because he's more committed than I am to Jesus. And so when someone shows up like that, it kind of sheds a light on what our life has been like and what our level of commitment is. And when someone like that shows up, it makes all the rest of us look bad. Why is this whole army of seasoned warriors standing and in terror, refusing to face this one warrior from the Philistines? It looks almost excusable as we just begin to read the story and we see this man Goliath, and his armor is described and his spear is so large like a weaver's beam, and it almost seems excusable. Wow, I wouldn't want to face this guy either. It really does sound like a really daunting task. And so almost we begin to sympathize with this whole army of men whose whole job is to give their life for the kingdom of God. But then all of a sudden one young man with no armor and no experience at all in warfare comes up and says, "I'll take him on because God's cause is at stake." And all of a sudden we have to realize, yeah, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with this whole army of warriors who aren't going to war. There's something wrong, as we just got through reading, that they were going to the battle, but no battle is taking place. They, you know, it sounds like a big deal. David comes at them right at the time when they're going to battle, it says, and they're in the trenches, but nothing's going on. All they're doing is standing around and they're waiting for this man Goliath to come out again and defy the armies of Israel. There's really no battle at all going on. And the reason why is because no one's willing to do their job. No one's willing to give their life for a cause that is bigger than themselves. At first, we might be sympathetic until we see David, this strapping young man, just come up and without any reserve whatsoever, without any thought to his own personal safety, say, is there not a cause? And we say, yes. Yes, there is a cause. Of course there's a cause. Why would we not be willing to go face this Goliath? And all of a sudden a light is shown on our personal cowardice, our lack of conviction, because someone with greater conviction has come along, and so we label that person radical. Well, that person's extreme. He's radical, and so we want to continue in our inactivity in the midst of what's supposed to be a battle. Some, like Eliab, will question you when you seek with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might to serve God and have no others before Him. But you know what's encouraging is some will question you, but some will cling to you. It's beautiful to read the words in 1 Samuel 18:1. It says, "And it came to pass when he," that is David, "had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." Those are strong words, aren't there? There were many people who were ashamed of this man, by this man, David, who came and put them all to shame because he was willing to stand when everybody else was going nowhere. Everyone else was quaking. But there was one man who loved what David had to say. He was excited about it. In fact, his soul was knit to David at that very moment. He didn't know him from Adam. He didn't know him from anybody, but he just heard the words that David spoke, and he said, "Yes, this is a man after my own heart. Yes, I love him like my own soul." Why was this? Why was this the case? Well, if you just turn a couple of chapters back, you'll see that Jonathan had just himself taken on a whole army of Philistines all by himself with him and his armor bearer. In fact, they had been camped out and all the rest of the army of Israel was sitting and napping and taking their rest. And Jonathan says to his armor bearer, "Hey, let's go see if maybe God will deliver this whole army of the Philistines into our hands." And so they go up, and which is amazing that he would even wonder whether God is able to do such a thing. We don't ever wonder like that, do we? Do we ever say, "I wonder if God is able to deliver this whole city into our hands. I wonder if God is able to do mighty things through our church in this area to overcome tremendous odds." Just to wonder it shows an amazing vision and strength of faith, doesn't it? Well, Jonathan is used of God to put the whole army of the Philistines to flight. And now, as the whole army of Israel stands petrified before this one man, Goliath, finally another man comes along, a man named David, and he says, "Is there not a cause?" And Jonathan says, "There's a man after my own heart." We don't know why Jonathan was unwilling to face or unable to go forward to face Goliath himself. I kind of imagine he probably would have. Maybe Saul was saying, "Hey, this is my son. I don't want to have him killed by Goliath. No, you can't go forward. I don't care how much you want to." He'd already snuck out once, and so Saul was on to his game. He snuck away and killed the whole Philistine army, and so Saul is saying, "No, that's too dangerous. I don't want you to do that anymore, and so I don't want you to go up against this giant." But we don't know exactly what it was. Maybe it was that Jonathan himself was afraid. But you know, to the courageous soul that has for a moment given in to intimidation, nothing is more inspiring than seeing another courageous soul come along and do what you wish you had the courage to do. There are those people who refuse to give way to the conviction when someone with courage comes along and does something that makes them look foolish, and instead they just say, "Ah, he's extreme, he's a radical, he has bad motives." But to someone else who's just been wishing they had the courage to do that, and then someone else comes along and says, "I'm willing to do that," it gives them the courage they need, and they leave their own humiliation behind, and they say, "Yes, that's what I wish that I had the strength to say myself. And I love the person who has the strength to say it." I don't know what Jonathan's motives were, but I tell you, his soul was knit with David when he heard David's speech to Saul. And there will be those, when you stand against insurmountable odds, who question your motives and call you a radical, but there will be those whose souls are knit to you, whose hearts are inspired by you, who cling to you and say, "Yes, that's a person after my own soul." Who knows, but in this very congregation, if those kinds of souls exist, those souls that have been wanting to have the courage to do something great for the kingdom of God, but they just needed somebody to stand in front of them and say, "I'm willing. Is there not a cause?" And when that happens, then their soul is encouraged. Their soul is knit to yours. And they say, "Yes, that's exactly what I wished that I had been doing all along. And I will join you in that pursuit as David did, and as Jonathan did, and showed tremendous courage later, even risking his own life for the sake of David. Well, Eliab turns and questions David's motives, but David just turns from him. In verse 30, it says pretty much he ignored Eliab as he continued to give his discouragements, and he turns and he just continues to ask people, is there not a cause? That is the same approach that we should take for those who seek to discourage us and question our motives. But then David faces another dialogue of discouragement. In 31 through 39, we read of David and Saul. Let's read. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered him out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with thee, for I have not proved them. And David put them off. Eliab questions David's motives. Saul questions David's ability. Now, not surprisingly, we find out that Eliab was echoing the spirit of his leader. Brother Gus Harder, before he left for the Philippines, equal degrees of battle, I'm sure, but before he left for the Philippines, said one of the great reasons why he felt compelled to go over there and help them in person was that he said, a congregation, it is impossible for a congregation to rise above the level of its leadership. And so without a seasoned minister over there, it was a difficulty for these new Christians and these immature Christians to rise to a higher level of maturity in their Christian walk. And so he felt compelled to go and help them as a more seasoned minister in the gospel. And that certainly is so, and we learn this from Saul and from numerous other examples in Scripture and in our life, don't we? That so often the weaknesses that are in the leadership show themselves in the membership. That's convicting beyond words to anyone who even ponders it a little bit as a leader, to think that that your child is looking up to you and that what example you set for them may very well be the example they follow. Someone has said that we learn from instruction, but we follow example. It's true, we can know in our heads all the right stuff to do, but if we haven't ever seen it played out in person in front of us, it's hard to follow. But on the other hand, if we are being instructed in the way of righteousness and then we see the way of righteousness played out by those who walk before us, it makes all the difference in the world. We can speak all day long about what the right thing to do is, but if they don't see us doing it as the pastor, as the parent, as the grandparent, then be assured that all that knowledge that's in their head may never make it down to their feet. They may never walk in that way that you've been teaching them if they don't see you showing by your conviction that very strength that you call them to. You know, Paul wrote to Timothy and he instructed him, "Let no man despise thy youth." And this is exactly what Saul is doing here with David, or attempting to do. He's saying, "You're too young, David. You are a youth, and this man has been a warrior from his youth. He has so much more experience than you do. He has so much more strength than you do. He's much more seasoned than you are. You cannot possibly face him." In fact, he says, "You are not able." Discouraging words, aren't they? Not just "you're not probably up for this yet," but "you just can't do it." How do you follow Paul's instruction, though? "Let no man despise thy youth." It almost seems like that's one of those instructions that's out of your control. How do you keep somebody else from despising your youth? Here Saul is looking at David and he's saying, "You're young, you can't do this." How can you possibly hope to affect other people's view of you? Well, here we learn from David maybe how this is done. And the only way I know to sum it up is when Paul says, "Let no man despise thy youth," how can we do this? It's by being undespisable. David has such a conviction about him. He has such a seriousness about his commitment. He's not deterred in any way by the discouragements that Saul throws in his path. He gives him examples of the experiences, the victories that he's had. And he shows such a confidence, not in himself, but in God's ability to work through him as he follows God's will for him, that there's no way to despise this youth that stands before him. Saul eventually says, "Go then. Here's the king." And he's issuing a command to David, and he says, "You are unable, you can't do this." And here's this young man and a subject of the king, and before the conversation's over, the king is giving in to the young man. Because there's that kind of conviction in the heart of that young man. He's undespisable. You can't despise someone who's that serious about serving God. There's nothing you can say. You can try to discourage them. You can try to tell them they're not able, but they refuse to answer to such a charge. They refuse to give in to that discouragement. And so, you make yourself undespisable by the way that you handle yourself in discouragements. You may be tempted to question your ability, just as Timothy apparently was questioning his, as Paul wrote to him and says, "Let no man despise thy youth." You may be tempted to say, how can I handle these situations that are so much bigger than I am? Whether you're young or old, it doesn't matter where you are. There are plenty of things out there that are so big in their scope and so large in their intimidation value that it's just so hard for us to even imagine us overcoming those kinds of obstacles. How can we do that? How can we do that when we feel so unable to do it? Well, I want to read you a poem by a young man I came across recently. This poem, it's expressed to me very well the expression of someone who's struggling with this very question. It's called Two Dreams. The poet says, "I have two dreams. Both mean so much to me. Both always with me. Both ever I see. One is a nightmare. I'm not sure from where. But ever it haunts me. Sometimes it snares all my hope's food and then feeds me with cares. Tells me I'm worthless and then my heart tears. Whispers alone, then shouts in my ear, weak. Whispers, tells me I'm worthless. I'm sorry. Whispers alone, then shouts in my ear, weak. Asks me, why bother? For what do you seek? Mocks me with modesty. Tells me I'm dumb. What did you expect? Through hope to become some small difference, doer of great deeds? planter of wisdom, of wisdom's great seeds. Herein lies the other greatest of dreams. You may think it silly, strange it may seem, but I know where, know whom this dream comes from. Tells me I'm something, that I am someone. I'm not just here, I'm here for a reason, though may not seem so, for a small season. It gives me hope, so I go on my way, thinking great thoughts, knowing that I someday will share what I've learned to help another, and then my nightmare I will have smothered. The poem is not speaking of someone who's saying there's some great cause in me, there's something about me that I'm able to overcome the nightmare that says you're weak, you're unable to do anything. But the poet is saying simply, there's a reason I'm here. I'm not just here to exist. I'm not just here in this line of warriors wondering, what am I doing here? When there's a Goliath standing out in front begging for a battle. I'm here for a reason. God has planted me in this place, in this battle for a reason, and I'm going to fight it. I'm not just here, I'm here for a reason, the poet says. If you struggle with those two dreams as well, sometimes thinking, how can I make a difference? And you hear that voice whispering in your ear, weak, unable, as Saul said to David, you can't do this. Then you remember that you are here for a reason. Just as David said, there is a cause. And I am here by no accident. If I am here, there's a cause, then I am going to be involved, engaged in that cause. David answered Saul from his own experience. We see in verses 34 and 35, he says, I slew the lion, I slew the bear, and so this one I can slay also. You never know if those lessons that you are learning in obscurity will help you when you come to that moment of testing. You never know when you're serving in the back rooms and no one's paying attention to what you're doing and you're being faithful, if what maybe God is preparing you for some great act of service in His kingdom. Maybe there will come a time when everybody's eyes are on you and you have to stand for what is right. Let me tell you, that strength will not come in an instant. That kind of strength is borne out by regular experience of small victories through the power of God in obscurity of our spiritual life. This is what David learned. And so from his experiences in obscurity, he was able to stand in the moment of opportunity. Now for you young people, I'm not suggesting that you jettison age, experience, leadership because of your misguided zeal. Every young person tends to think that their way is the best way and how come everybody's not doing it my way? And that's not what David is doing here. He's not disrespectful to Saul. He's, in fact, you'll see as Saul later, he's even trying to kill him. He still has respect for Saul. It's not that David was a rebellious, got to do it my way kind of young man. It was rather that he realized, I have to do it God's way. And even if some small-minded man tries to discourage me, I refuse to give up the grandeur of the vision of the kingdom of God that I have been given. And that's what I encourage you to as well. Not to despise age or experience or leadership, but rather not to give up great visions of the kingdom to small-minded men. Well, finally, David turns from Saul. He sheds the armor that Saul has tried to give him, and he goes out against Goliath. And we read about this in verses 40 through 52. And he took his staff in his hand and chose him five smooth stones out of the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine, and the Philistine came on and drew near unto David. And the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. For he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of armies of the Israels, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. And he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass when the Philistines arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him. And cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel of Judah and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Sherem, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. Eliab questions David's motives. Saul questions his ability. Here Goliath questions his sanity. He says, Are you crazy? David comes up against Goliath and here's this young boy. And there's a giant warrior, a seasoned warrior. And the wording is almost as if Goliath is looking around, waiting for someone to come and face him. And then he looks down almost. It's as if he's looking around and all of a sudden he finds David in his vision, because David is so far out of anything that he expected to come up against him that he is shocked when he sees David. And he says, Am I a dog that you come to me with staves? Are you insane? Do you see the shield bearer in front of me? Do you see the size of my shield? Do you not see the spear? Do you see the sword? You don't have a spear. You don't have a sword. You don't have a shield. What are you doing? Now, I don't know if any doubt went through David's mind at that moment, but I know that plenty of doubts would have gone through mine at that moment. This is when the devil bares his teeth, when he threatens your life, when he growls in your ear. When you face that trial, you've put off the discouragement, you've said, No, I have the right motives. I know that I'm doing this for the Lord and not for my own glory. Yes, I know that I'm able to do this through His leadership and through His strength. And then you face that great giant, that great trial, that great difficulty, that great challenge, and it's just as big as they warned you that it was. They weren't lying when they said, What are you thinking? Why would you go against an enemy of that kind of magnitude? Why would you face something that ferocious? Why would you face something that difficult? I don't know what David thought on this situation, but I do know what he felt on other situations, because he writes it down. In Psalm 27:12, he prays, Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. David knew what it was to face giant discouragements and be intimidated by it. To realize, God, I need your help, because this is a real giant. And he wants to grind my bones to dust. And he's cruel. And he hates me. There's no friendliness here. There's no honor here. This is not a moment of glory. This is a moment of real, grinding, gut-wrenching battle. And it's just as bad as they warned me it was. He says again in Psalm 22:12, many bulls have compassed me. Strong bulls of Bashan have beset me round. In verse 13, they gaped upon me with their mouths as a ravening and a roaring lion. He's switching back and forth between metaphors so fast you may not catch the impetus of what he's saying. But he's saying, my enemies are as strong as bulls and they're as ferocious as lions. That's what I'm up against. I'm poured out like water. Have you ever felt like that? Maybe you look at David in this one moment and you think that's what every courageous person always looks like, but it's not. Or maybe on the inside, this is exactly what David felt like even on that occasion. Maybe it was everything that he could do to muster the words, to whisper them out until they finally grew to a shout, to Goliath to defy him and say, no, you will be smitten by me this day. But he says, I am poured out like water and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws. You know what it is to be nervous to the point where there's no moisture left in your mouth, where your tongue is cleaving to the roof of your mouth. That's exactly what David is putting before us in this imagery. Now listen, if you have fought spiritual battles at all, I know that you know what I'm talking about. If you have tried to serve the Lord even for a moment, I know that you know what I'm speaking of. There are those difficulties that threaten to take your every ounce of courage, your every ounce of conviction, all that you have mustered together to try to even be that good Christian that you know you want and try to be, and all of a sudden your heart is wax. And you know, I can't do this. I can't face this. This thing is going to consume me. I'm not looking at the great bear and the great lion that I was able to overcome before. Now I'm looking at Goliath. And he's big and he's fierce. And I'm poured out like water. In that moment, we're encouraged to remember that God is able to deliver. Because David stood against this insurmountable odd, this unbelievable enemy, and he overcame him without a sword, without a spear, without a shield, without any of the things that we would rely on for victory. But he relied on his God, and his God gave him victory. It's interesting, this psalm, Psalm 22:12, it's a messianic psalm. When David says, many bulls have compassed me about, strong bulls of Bashan, I'm poured out like water. These are the empathetic words of our Savior, messianically prophesied by David, regarding Jesus Christ on the cross. It's not to say that he had doubts, that he had fears, that he couldn't face the difficulty, but to know that he realized the difficulty, that he faced it and was aware of the great danger, the great difficulty, the great frustration, the great pain of what was coming upon him. Sometimes you and I will be delivered through the fire, not just from the fire. David was delivered from the fire. He didn't actually give his life on that day. He took Goliath's life. But sometimes it will cost us everything and more than we'd imagined to serve God. Sometimes it's like the Hebrew children, and you go through unscathed through these amazing trials. You think, how in the world? Their hair's not even singed. But sometimes it costs you your head. Sometimes you're sawn asunder You're tempted. You're slain with the sword. And you wander about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, as the saints are described there in Hebrews 11. God always delivers His children, sometimes through the fire, sometimes from the fire, but He always delivers them. In conclusion, I just want to encourage you, when you face these dialogues of discouragement in your life, and sometimes it's a dialogue that you honestly have with yourself, not so much with someone else, but when someone questions your motives, when someone questions your ability, when someone, maybe even yourself, question your sanity, just remember that God is able to deliver. You think your great thoughts. Do those great deeds because there is a cause. It is the glory of God, and it is worthy of your greatest thoughts, your mightiest efforts. If you today have a desire to stand for Jesus Christ, perhaps your standing will be an encouragement to someone else who knows they need to stand and hasn't stood either. We give you the opportunity to publicly profess Him as we sing this song. May God bless you.